Well, it took us 263 episodes, but we finally got Dan Reavers, the longest tenured technology Synod employee, on the show to talk about PC maintenance. We'll talk about how to keep things tip-top and how to help those relatives over the Thanksgiving holidays get their PCs and Macs in tip-top shape as well. All that and more coming up next on the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 263 for November 20th, 2012. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you're watching a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And I don't do this alone. In fact, you wouldn't want me to do it alone, so I brought my closest friends in the technology world. First of all, one that you've seen many, many times. In fact, almost 263 times on the show, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
That's me, coming to you from Sleepy Eye, and I am offering thanks this week for the Wells Tech Podcast. Thanksgiving week, and we are happy to be doing this and sharing technology ideas in this way.
First of all, you got to share what the flowers are for behind you there.
Oh, yeah. I'm thankful for a loving husband who surprised me with flowers this week for no real reason, but I thought I'd share them with you guys.
And now I feel totally guilty. So I guess I know what I have to do today or tonight. We have a special guest today. And Sally, shame on us. 263 episodes and we have not had Dan Reavers on the show. I don't know how we did that, but Dan has been in the Senate office for many, many, many years and knows a lot about technology. Welcome, Dan.
Good morning, all.
Dan is just down the way from my office, but through the wonders of technology, it looks like we're all in three different locations. But Dan, explain a little bit about what you have been doing for the Senate for the last 20-some-odd years.
Oh, my. Well, I started here as a trainer. Training people on a new database system. Mm-hmm. We affectionately refer to it as Progress. And at the time, it was Progress. Over the past number of years, I've taken on system administration responsibilities, a telephone system, support, maintenance, all sorts of hats.
Okay. And you actually spent some time as a teacher in a Wells school as well, so you've got that background as well. So that, I think, helps as we support Wells teachers and pastors, and certainly helps as we support the people in the Synod Administration Building as well. Well, you might ask, why are we having Dan on the show on episode 263? Well, it's a very good reason, and that is we're going to be talking about how to maintain your PC. We thought that this would be very practical and very timely, as many of us will have a little bit of time over the extended Thanksgiving break to do a little PC cleanup, or you may be asked by that special someone, that person maybe you only see once in a while, to help out a little bit with some of their PC pain.
Yeah, I get the question quite often, actually, and I think probably the most common one is, my PC is just running so slow. What can I do to speed it up? Can I buy something to fix this problem? Or, you know, do I need to reinstall everything from scratch? How do I clean up my PC and make it run faster?
And there are plenty of resources out there and plenty of ideas, some true, some false. So hopefully on the show today, we'll clear up some of the mystery around PC maintenance. And primarily, the things we're going to be talking about will be cross-platform, although Macs are a little bit different than PCs, and then we won't even probably even venture into the Linux side. We know we've got some Linux listeners as well. But many of the things are things that are probably going to be on the PC side, because there are many more of those at this point. And where do we start, Sally?
Boy, probably just looking at the hardware itself and some of the things that you need to do just to keep your hardware cleaned up and functional. I guess compressed air can be a friend to you, especially if you ever eat near your keyboard. It's good to keep it clean. just keep your mouse dust free. Potentially use a vacuum to actually clean dust out of the hardware. Dan, you had a tip. You said don't use compressed air inside the case.
Right. Compressed air can cause more of a mess than it helps. I would recommend using a vacuum as much as possible. And Sally suggested one thing important. Not everybody may want to try this, but I would suggest crack open the case, depending on where you keep your desktop, and actually do some vacuuming inside. You'd be surprised how much dust collects, especially near some of the components like the processor, that can really affect the amount of heat that is kept in the computer, mm-hmm. and that affects speed.
And performance, right, and actually shortens the life of the equipment as well. You're also going to get a lot of dust around the power supply and the fan.
Right.
You know, keeps things going there.
One word. You want to be careful, though.
yeah.
Sorry. You want to be careful as you're vacuuming that you stay get close to the equipment, but don't get too close.
Yeah. Make sure you're discharging yourself as well. You don't want to introduce static electricity, which sometimes vacuums will do as well with that air movement and you shuffling your feet on a carpet or whatever. So make sure you touch something metal and not adding any kind of electrical shock to the equipment, because that can damage the equipment as well. So,
speaking of keeping it at a good temperature, you should avoid, especially if you have a laptop and you're typically putting it in your car or whatever, you want to avoid exposing it to extreme heat or extreme cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always keep it at a reasonable temperature.
Yeah, good. Just a general rule of thumb, never leave your equipment in the car. That they're for a lot of different reasons, not just for the extreme temperatures that you may experience there, but just the risk of theft. Even here in our back parking lot, the last couple of months we've had some break-ins. So right in the middle of the day. So it's usually not a good idea to tempt somebody with that. And there are also bags and things that you can buy, cases that you can buy that do protect them a little bit, not only from breakage or dropping, but also from temperatures. They're thermal. Insulated, so some of those might be worth the investment as well, especially if you may not have a choice about carrying that equipment with you in a car that maybe gets cold or hot, depending on where you live.
Another piece of equipment that sometimes gets overlooked, even though you're looking at it, is your monitor. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a flat screen or LCD-type monitor, you want to keep that clean. That collects a lot of dust. Don't use paper products. Use a microfiber type cloth, mm-hmm. the same kind you'd use for glasses, cleaning glasses. Don't put liquid on the screen. Dampen the cloth if you need to, and then only use water or a very mild detergent. Some have suggested even a little vinegar if there's something really difficult to get off, a vinegar water mix of equal proportions. There too, be careful. Don't press too hard on the screen. That can damage it.
Yeah, and we're talking usually about these LCD screens that are out now.
Right.
And there are different kinds of LCD screens. Some of them have this matte finish and are a little bit softer to the touch. Some are a little bit more hardened and have the glossy finish. But I think the advice is valid in either case. Just be careful with that and don't press too hard. You can damage the machinery, so to speak, behind it. So, and that's something you don't want to replace, especially on a laptop. That can get very expensive, of course.
One more hardware mention, and this probably isn't really a maintenance thing, but more of a smart shopping thing, is that the now popular SSD drives, the solid state drives that don't have any moving parts for a hard drive, are probably a wiser way to go if you can afford it, because you're going to just avoid maintenance issues with something that doesn't have the moving parts to break.
Yep, those prices are coming down as RAM prices come down. Basically, the SSD drives of today, at least those that fit in laptops, are really no more than just a little chip, that you insert, and usually the user can do that if they know how to open their case. Or it's a probably a modest fee to go to your local PC maintenance store and have them install it. But it will make a huge difference in the speed at which your computer starts and operates, and that's a big productivity boost. I think the research is not complete as far as how durable they are compared to the regular spinning hard drive. I think they're less susceptible to, you know, drops and shakes and damage, that kind of thing. But they do have a limited life as well. There's only so many read and writes that can happen to RAM. So it may depend on your usage, how long or how much you get out of those. So as with anything, whether it's a spinning hard drive or an SSD drive, good PC maintenance involves backups. So you want to make sure that you have a good backup strategy in place and that you're very faithful in doing that. Someone once told me that if you have only one copy of a file, it really doesn't exist, because at some point it will disappear. And if it's an important file, then you definitely want to have at least two copies, and preferably a copy that's not in the same location that your computer is.
Sure. And everyone's definition of important is different. For personal use, your important files are going to be all those digital photos that you don't want to lose. Looking at it from a church or school perspective, you need to evaluate, you know, what files are critical to the mission of your congregation or school, and ensure that you do have extra copies of those.
Right.
As we're talking about SSD, solid-state drives, maybe this would be a nice transition into some of the other types of cleanup that we can do. One of the things that's often recommended is defragging your drive, and that's something you don't want to do on a solid-state drive for exactly the reason Martin mentioned. There's only so many reads and writes, and the defrag process is continually reading and writing, so that's going to wear out your solid-state drive instead of actually help you.
And usually the drivers and the software that manage these drives does a good job at making sure that files do not get overly fragmented. So they kind of do that on the fly these days. So unless you have a really old hard drive, defragging is really not ultimately necessary. The technology has advanced to a point where that's really not going to be a slowdown. Even if there is fragmentation, your computer is fast enough to assemble those files and not create a real bottleneck for you. There's probably a couple other things as we're talking about just hard disk maintenance that we want to be aware of, and one of those would be to not get sucked into some of those things that you'll see in your email or that you'll see on a website in a banner ad saying PC slow, click here to speed things up. It'll download a little thing and then it'll ultimately scan your hard drive, and for $19.99, it'll actually do a little bit better job, and you'll get 10% more, whatever. Those things, at least in my experience, I don't know about you, Dan, are more just a scam than anything else.
I agree. That's not the place where you want to look for real PC maintenance.
Yep. And if you've ever had to get rid of one of those, it's nigh on impossible. Right. Once they get a hold of your computer, you can't delete them. It's really hard. So
they move in. Yes.
That's right.
Speaking of hard drive maintenance and just general PC maintenance, the thing that you interact with on a minute-by-minute basis with your computer is the operating system itself. Whether you're a Mac or a PC or Linux, it is what really kind of manages all of your files, your applications, and is often the reason that things will move quickly or will move slowly. So keeping your operating system up to date is probably a very good practice. I know that sometimes when I help relatives, including one that I live with, there are sometimes many, many updates that need to happen, and they've just been ignored over a period of time. So that's just good hygiene, where if Microsoft says that there's an important security update or other driver updates, those are probably wise to install, because they're doing good things for you.
And one of the common questions I get is, do I also need to install all these Java updates and Flash updates? I don't use Java and Flash. Why do I need those? But actually, pretty much if you're surfing the web, you are using Java and Flash. And so I try to stay on top of those and not let those backup. For one thing, they just nag you to death if you don't go ahead and install them. So it's fine to install your Flash and Java updates. Another one that's kind of naggy is Adobe PDF. So if you are an Adobe PDF user, you can go ahead and stay on top of those updates as well.
And they may not always provide a speed boost or optimized performance, but many times those updates in particular, Flash, Java, and Adobe, are usually security updates where they found a hole or a security vulnerability that needs to be patched. So that is an excellent reason to keep those up to date and, you know, just kind of live with the, you know, the nag and get it done, because You can try and live without those tools, but your experience, your computing experience, would be somewhat diminished.
Mm-hmm. Right, and as you're installing those, or as those things pop up to get installed, also be watching during the installation process, because as they walk you through that, there may be areas where they'll have a section checked that it's going to also install a nice toolbar for you or another program that you probably don't want, and it's not going to help you. So be sure to uncheck those things when you install those updates.
Yeah, toolbars, at least in my experience, are a big slowdown in the browsing experience. And I was helping somebody at the Asia Translators Conference I was at over in Hong Kong a couple of weeks ago, and he had, I think, four or five toolbars stacked on top of each other. You know, there was Ask, and there was Yahoo, and there was Google, and there was Bing. All of them kind of do the same thing, but I don't know that all of them, or really any of them, are overly valuable if you just use some of the built-in browser tools like Favorites and you know, the search, you know, the Super Search Bar or whatever. I don't think any of them provide a lot of value. The only toolbar that I actually ever use is Deco, because that gives me that quick one-click access to you know, to tagging items and to sharing bookmarks. And so all the other ones I stay away from. But you're right, Dan, because it's really a little bit sneaky how some of these get into the installation process. And there are deals made between companies where they're saying, well, if you'll give us this, we'll give you that. And so the, you know, Ask gets in there, and, you know, like you said, it's an automatic, the checkbox is there and it's checked by default, and you have to physically opt out of it, you know, to make it not install. And sometimes they're hard to get rid of too. You almost have to go into, you know, your programs, you know, uninstall program application, wherever that is, and whatever operating system you're using to actually get rid of them, because they do install as bona fide programs. Now, not all of them are security problems, and not all of them do slow your computer down, but just a good idea not to allow it to install as a part of some of these other installation processes. If you want to install them, then, you know, maybe go directly to them and, you know, look through what it's actually going to do and set the options the way you want, because these are just going to give you a default install with everything.
You're right. Many of those can provide a small benefit. The problem, as you pointed out, is that they often layer themselves on, so you end up with 5, 6, 7 of these things installed, even though you don't use them. And that can eventually slow you down.
Yep.
So, yeah, we have a couple of Lifehacker articles that have a lot of these tips in it. We want to make sure and point our listeners to those. And I think kind of a common theme, at least on the software side that I'm hearing from you guys, is just avoid they call it installing crappy programs in the Lifehacker article. So I'll just be blunt and quote them. And, you know, I think there are some good solutions out there that look for this kind of stuff on your computer and clean it up for you. You guys found some recommendations there?
Right. Well, just commenting on what you said, Sally, how do you know whether a program is good or not is really one of the questions. And that isn't always easy to determine. But as in life, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So if you got something promising, you know, great performance boosts, maybe not. I wouldn't, especially if it's popping up unsolicited. That's things you want to stay away from.
Yeah. One program that I've found and I usually recommend that works, I think, pretty well, and I believe there's both a Mac and Windows version. I'm not totally sure on that, but I know there's at least there is a PC version for sure. And that's called Soluto. I think I mentioned that in the past on this show. Soluto is something that you install. It runs in the background and is checking all those startup applications. And we'll kind of categorize these startup applications that are slowing your system down and group them by, you know, don't delete, can potentially delete, or, you know, you should delete. So it's based on research and other people using these different programs, and it'll actually tell you if you uninstall, or you can actually delay the loading of some of these applications till your computer is a little bit more free after the boot up process. It'll actually tell you how much time that's going to chop off the normal boot up process, and you can really chisel that down pretty low, you know, in certain cases by taking a lot of these things down. So a lot of the applications that you install, which you want, do add some overhead, and they add some programs that run in the background that maybe you never use, and you can live without, and they would actually speed up the process. So Saluto is a good choice. On the Mac side, one program that I would really recommend if you do any kind of adding of programs, you know, from the internet, is something called App Cleaner, where it's a little utility that you drag your app when you want to uninstall it, and it goes and finds all the little files that are installed throughout your system and gets rid of all of them. So it's kind of like a clean uninstall, which is sometimes difficult with programs because they leave residue. You know, I think we've all experienced this when you uninstalled a program and then you want to install it again. It has now remembered that you had installed it in the first place. So obviously there's something on your computer that it has left behind, that it remembers, hey, I was here before, and remembers your settings or whatever. And sometimes that can create problems if the install didn't go well the first time, or the uninstall didn't go well, you've still got residue. So something like this, App Cleaner, is really good to use if you're uninstalling programs, especially on the Mac. I think there are similar tools on the PC side too.
Yes, actually, one of those tools for the PCs is called Revo Uninstaller.
Okay.
I haven't used it a great deal, but it does the same type of thing. Does a real clean uninstall.
Yep. And it gets rid of every file and goes into the registry and gets rid of all that junk, which can slow things down as well.
I think we should put a seal of approval on our Wells Tech listeners. They're ready to go and face Thanksgiving week and clean up all their family's computers as they venture out in this tech world that we live in.
Yes, kind of a laying on of hands. Yes.
So good stuff.
And I'm sure we haven't covered everything. So if our listeners have things that they have found useful, we would love to hear about that and share with our other listeners as well. So please let us know by going to wellstech.wells.net and using one of the tools there. You can leave a comment, or you can use any of the other ways to communicate with us via email or Facebook, Twitter, Google+, et cetera, et cetera.
So they can even call us on the phone. We'd love to hear their voice at 405-4-WELLS.
405-4-WELLS. That's F-O-R-W-E-L-S. Let's move on, Sally and Dan, to ministry resources. And I found one that I wanted to share that I think is, for those of you watching, I'll do a quick screen share here, that is, I found kind of cool. I came across it as a result of a Lifehacker article where the title of the Lifehacker article is Memorize the 1,000 Most Common Words in a Language Before Immersing Yourself in It, which is kind of interesting in and of itself. I know many of our listeners may be even required to learn a different language for either cross-cultural ministry or missionary work. And so this is a good read, but the technology involved here is kind of cool. They recommend a program called Memrise, MEMRISE. And we've talked about some of these programs before that do something similar, but it's basically a tool that allows you to create a series of definitions, terms and definitions, where you can create different levels, and obviously they're referencing it with vocabulary words, but you could do it with all kinds of different subjects, and they have many, many different kinds of courses here too. You know, capital cities of the 50 states, longest rivers and largest lakes, in capitals in India. They have arts and literature, math and science, geography, history, entertainment, just general trivia. And so you can actually use any of these to kind of learn or memorize different terms and definitions, but you can also create your own. So if you have, let's say, a catechism class, or if you're teaching a computer class, and I just played a little bit around with a class that I created or a course that I created called Technology Terms. So you give a technology term that may be pretty geeky or pretty well known to us, but geeky to anybody else, and then the definition of it. And then you can give little memory hints. They can be pictures. They can be audio clips. They can be little sayings, just kind of cool stuff. So just to give you an example, I think I just clicked on, or I'm looking at a course on capitals in the Caribbean. So you can actually go through and do a quiz. So one of the countries is Anguilla. So they give a little memory tip. Once the Hulk was so angry, he jumped to Anguilla and punched hard into the ground until there was only a valley left. That's a pretty lame one, but there are others a little more memorable that'll help you remember both the term and the definition. And then you can do little quizzes and assessments. So it's free. There's no cost to it. It's nice. It's a nice visual display, you know, of the program. But I can think of a lot of ministry uses for this, both in the classroom and then personally as well. So that's Memrise, M-E-M-R-I-S, I think it's S-E. So give that a shot as kind of a memorization aid or tool.
I can see that taking some time on the front end to build. Of course, you could build it over time as well, but a good investment, it seems, if you can use it with your catechism class for years into the future or whatever.
And they could be private or public. And then you can build kind of in private and then keep them private, just let people know what the URL is, and then make them public if you like as well. So pretty cool tool. I liked it.
Excellent.
Sally, we should move on to our picks of the week. And as our honored guest, we will allow Dan, and I know he's got a pick. We kind of prepped him a little bit for this process. So we'll let Dan go first. Dan, you have a pick.
Well, my pick is called What's Running. It's a little geekier version of what Martin was talking about before, to kind of know what's going on your computer. This deals not only with programs that are running, processes that are running, but also it can help you evaluate your network issues and so on. As well as just general startup, what's starting in your when your computer boots up. So it gives you a number of different areas. You can see along the Martin's showing you a screenshot there. You can see along the left side. There's different areas, services that start running, and things like that. So that's my pick of the week.
So when you load this up, it's something that you just start and it does a quick scan of your system and then gives you a report, or do you have to kind of keep it running over time to get smarter?
Actually, the way I've used it, and again, I've used only an older version, the 3.0 version that you're showing there, I have not used. But yeah, you start it up and it basically just monitors your computer in live time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and gives you all kinds of stats there.
Right.
And then I am assuming that you can go in and then make some changes via the tool as well.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
It has a link for donating, so I'm guessing it's a free download, but you can support their efforts with a donation.
It is freeware.
Awesome.
And I'm assuming PC only, based on what I'm seeing here.
As far as I know, yes.
Okay. Very good. Sally, you have a pick this week?
I do. I'm going to point our listeners to a website called speedtest.net.
Oh, one of my favorites.
This isn't really hardware or local computer centric, but yet an important component is how fast we connect to the internet. And are we really getting from our internet service provider the service or the connection speeds that they promised us when we signed up with them? I will... you know, couch it in the fact that there's a lot of advertisements on this site.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know what to click on. Yeah,
exactly. A lot of buttons and a lot of links. So if you're watching on the screen, you can see there's an advertisement near the top of the screen and also one on the side before you test, try scanning your system for issues. I'm not concerned with any of that extra stuff. I'm going for the begin test. And when I click on that,
she's going to do this while we're on Google Hangouts.
Right.
So she's very trusting that her system can handle this.
We'll see. It starts by pinging my system, and then it checks my download speed and gives me some feedback on download speed. I'm at 12
pretty good.
Mbps. That means?
Okay. Yep.
And then it checks your upload speed. So it does some communication back and forth to a server and gives you a 1.45 megabits per second upload speed. Then you have all kinds of buttons yet again. You can share your results and you can download things. Don't do any of that stuff. Just get this information here and compare it to what you would expect, what your service provider has promised you, and see if you're in the zone where you expect to be. There's a button near the bottom where you can test again if you want to, you know, give it a couple of whirls to see if you get comparable results each time you test.
Yeah, this is a great tool, Sally. You can also test for different sites, so you don't have to always check how long it's taking to get to your closest location. Sometimes that will vary, and you can kind of determine if there's an issue. Another way that I, and this is also available on mobile devices, tablets, there's also versions of this for all of those. One reason I use this quite often is not just to test my network connection, but also to determine if the slowness that I'm seeing, let's say on a website or in an application, is due to my network connection or something else. And as we're talking about PC maintenance, sometimes your network connection may be fine, but it's something else on your system. Maybe it's flash that's gone out of control, you know, on your browser or whatever, that's causing a slowdown, and it's not the internet. So this is a good way to kind of rule out or whittle down what might the problem be or what might it not be in this case. And so if your speed's good, then you need to look elsewhere. But this can also be a good indicator that, yeah, it is your network connection, that it isn't your system. So
absolutely. So speedtest.net. I tried speedtest.com. That's not it. Make sure you use the .net version.
Yep.
That's
absolutely.
It. That's my pick.
Very good. My pick of the week is something that I have used in the past, and I think is a valuable investment to those people who have mobile devices, whether they be phones or tablets. Anything that has the potential to get kicked around or put in the same pocket as your keys or change or whatever. And that's a product from Zagg, Z-A-G-G. It's zagg.com. And they have all kinds of products, but they're all kind of designed to do the same thing, and that's to protect your gadget. So they're basically a piece of film that gets applied to the surface that you're interested in protecting. So, for instance, my phone, the Samsung Galaxy S3, I noticed right away that the screen... I've had an iPhone in the past, and I think those screens are a little bit more durable. But this screen seemed to get scratches a little bit more easily. So I was a little bit concerned about the investment that was made in that phone and, you know, losing its value by, you know, getting the screen all nicked up. And the screens are very expensive to replace on these devices. So for $20, you can get a what they call an invisible shield. This is the Invisible Shield HD I've got on the screen for $19.99. These are applied via kind of a wet solution. So you spray it, and then basically it adheres, not in a destructive way, but in a non-destructive way, to the surface that you're applying it to. And then you kind of brush out the... the moisture, and then let it dry for about 24 hours. And then basically it provides a nice shield between whatever object might do damage to your screen and the screen itself. And these products have come a long way. I've seen some very poor ones, two, 3 years ago. Now I think they've kind of advanced the technology. So you really can't even tell that it's on there. The surface is smooth, so it's as if you were touching the glass itself or the device itself. And the resolution on them is much better, so that you're not losing or degrading the resolution of some of these nice screens anymore. And these are available for all kinds of devices, including iPhones and iPads, and all the Apple lines, most of the major phones these days, from all the manufacturers, from HTC, from Samsung, from, as I mentioned, from Apple, Asus, the Nexus 7 has one. They do have to be custom fit, so if your device doesn't show up here, you can't really just order a generic one. It's got to be on the list here. They also make them for the for the backs and the sides, so it's the installation can be a little tricky. You can get these. I've usually gone to the kiosk in the mall. There's one in Mayfair Mall. Those of you that are local here to Milwaukee, in most malls, I think there's usually one of these. Certainly around Christmas time, a Zag kiosk. But you can also go to any Best Buy, and they will do installation. And if they do the installation, then it comes with a warranty. So if something peels, starts coming off or whatever, you can take it back, and they will. They'll redo it for you. So great investment, not a lot of cost here. You do have to be careful for the first 24 hours after they put it on not to throw it in your pocket or bounce it around a little bit, because it will get marred a little bit if you don't be careful in that first 24 hours. But after that, very solid and I think very very wise investment for those gadgets.
Excellent choice. I use it on my smaller device. I don't have a Shield on my iPad.
I don't either, because I don't throw that around. Right, exactly. Yeah. I don't have one on my iPad either. But for anything that goes in my pocket or something that gets knocked around, iPod Touch maybe, something like that, mm-hmm. I've got stuff for that. So those are probably pretty valuable.
Just an extra layer of comfort there,
yep,
for
absolutely.
Your device.
Sally, we should probably remind everybody about our last seven best show of the year.
Coming up in 2 weeks, we will head off the month of December with a discussion of the seven best mobile computing tips. And I know, obviously maybe screen covers are one of those tips. We all have these devices kind of proliferating into our lives. Maybe more are coming into your life with Christmas coming up.
That's right.
So we thought that would be a good way to round out the year of seven best tips. It's been a fun journey to kind of identify some top products and ideas and tools to use in a lot of different ways. And we'll look at mobile computing in December.
Yep. And we've already got a couple suggestions on the list. So the list is in the formation stage. So if you've got something, again, go to wellstech.wells.net and provide your thoughts on mobile computing tips.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to community feedback. And we got a ton of it as usual. Sally?
Yeah, I'm learning all the time from our listeners. And I'm trying to click on the correct window here. Let's see if I can make it work. All right. First up, we were blessed with a Pinterest pin this week from our friend Perry Lund. And he pinned an article about the Apple HyperCard. It was a little bit of tech history. I enjoyed reading this article, Perry, and thanks for sharing it. Basically, HyperCard was a program that was available on old Macs in the day. He talks about 1988 being the time frame that the author played with HyperCards. And it sounds like it's kind of a precursor to the web, the hypertext interactivity. With HyperCard program, you could build your own pages on the computer and put them in a stack and interconnect them with little buttons that made noises and all kinds of cool things like that. So it is coming up on the 25th anniversary of the creation of HyperCard. It's not a program that still exists today, but like I said, interesting history if you're into that kind of thing, to kind of see how technology evolved from way back in history in the 1980s.
Yeah, actually, the paradigm here is the going back even before computer applications, or when computer applications were on physical cards. themselves. And Dan, you probably remember those times.
I'm afraid so.
When you probably first started here, were they using cards in the Senate office?
No. Okay. Well, no, I don't believe they were, not on the system that they
had. That's where they started. We could probably find a few folks around the building here who could remember those days. But that's how you programmed a computer with little cards that you punched out different holes to actually do the programming of the computer. And that's really where the name came from, HyperCard, where they said, well, we can do this with bits and bytes. So. Interesting. Yep. Thanks, Perry. And Perry, very impressed. You're very secure in your manhood by using Pinterest there.
Go, Perry.
That's right.
All right. I read a comment on our Google Plus page. One of the people we follow is Chad Kafka. We had Chad on the show not that long ago, an educator there in the Milwaukee area. And he asked an interesting question I thought was worth sharing here. He said, how do you do a Google Plus Hangout on air with just one person? So, Martin, you joked at the beginning of the show that you wouldn't want to do this alone, this Wells Tech podcast.
Well, my listeners wouldn't want me to do this alone. That's what I said.
So, but apparently Chad wants to just deliver something, have it being live streamed via YouTube using that on-air capability that exists in Google Hangouts. And he was wondering how to do that. And someone suggested just invite somebody and then kick them out. So end up being in the Hangout by yourself. But apparently to launch the Hangout, you need to have at least one person invited into it besides you.
So. Right. And you could create a dummy account, too, to do that, a dummy Google Plus account, which we've got a couple accounts that we use. We have a Wells Tech podcast account, and we have our individual accounts, so we could easily do that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, either way works. So
interesting concept. So if you do need to deliver a message alone, it can be done.
Oh, you get all you people who enjoy the monologue. That's
the way to do it. Yes. There you go. A couple of just random comments from different listeners. We heard from Jason Schmidt out in Omaha, Nebraska, and he was following up on a recommendation from a few months ago when we talked about Google Chromebooks with a browser alternative called Rounder, R-N-D-R. And this is something we talked about as being a way to get around a particular problem with the Chromebook. Martin, maybe you remember that discussion. Anyway,
was Rounder, it Flash?
I think it was. It was Flash, that you could get it through the Rounder browser.
Or Java, one of those two. I forget which one it was.
And then someone followed up and said, well, it might bypass some of your filtering software in your school as well. So there were some cautions there, but I guess it's all out the window because apparently Rounder is shut down. As of November 15th, it no longer exists. So that's what Jason was alerting us to. So too bad.
Well.
Yeah. Cindy Krieger over in Michigan wrote to us. Cindy works, interestingly enough, for the state of Michigan and does a lot of web development for them. And she said a resource was brought to her attention recently called Presenter Media. And she wanted to share that link with our listeners. Several of her coworkers have been working on different presentations, and Presenter Media gives you some excellent templates and 3D animations and things to use in your presentation. I think it's all fee-based, so if you want to use their tools, then you have to pay the price. But Cindy is recommending Presenter Media.
Very good. Thanks, Cindy.
And then we also heard from Pastor Rob Gunther, who's up at Grace in Kenai, Alaska. And Pastor Gunther regularly shares some great tech tips with us. And this week, he's actually just writing in to tell us how much he's excited by the If This Then That website. IFTTT.com. If This Then That allows you to automate some functions. So let's say you want it to watch your Instagram account, and anytime you post something there, to copy it over to your Flickr account, you can set up If This Then That, give it the proper permissions, and it'll do that. Well, Pastor Gunther is in love with it, he says. he says he set it up as his RSS to email, replacing Feed My Inbox, which is shutting down. So if the RSS is updated, then email me. I also set it up for weather updates. Imagine that in Alaska, HIDWOMP weather updates. If snow is in the forecast for tomorrow, then text me. And I set it up to streamline his sermon update notifications. I copy and paste his sermon into an email and send the email to a list of members and school parents. And one of the addresses is to my blog, so it automatically posts when I email. And then now he set it up so that if my blog is updated, then post the update to my Facebook page, so my Twitter account, and to my church's Facebook page. So he's got all of these things automated through this website. And you do that by building what they call recipes or different steps that you want the website to take for you. And there are a lot of recipes suggested to you, but you can certainly create your own. So sounds like Pastor Gunther has a really automated life going there, and he doesn't have to do a whole lot of work because the if this then that system takes care of all that brain work for him, all that automation.
It's a cool and very simple tool, and they keep adding other services as they come along, so it's it becomes more and more valuable. So it's cool.
Absolutely. Another email we received was from our friend Leslie Bergman, who's at Good Shepherd in West Allis, Wisconsin. And she was writing to tell us that there was some failure with the RSS Graffiti app. We've talked about RSS Graffiti in the past as a way to get RSS feeds to your Facebook page. And apparently it needs to be jump-started because it's not working on some of our Facebook pages. Maybe we're depending on RSS Graffiti to get the Wells Daily Devotion to our church pages or something like that. We'll include a link that Leslie shared in the show notes to the help article she found on it. And it talks about basically uninstalling and reinstalling, but it'll save your settings if you do it the right way. So don't check the box that says to remove all the posts because you don't want to get all your history lost in the process. And thanks, Leslie. As always, she's very on top of these tech issues and willing to share with the class. So we greatly appreciate that, Leslie.
Cool.
Martin, you had a tweet out there in the Twitterverse that you wanted to share with
us. Yeah, if you want to share information with us or with everybody via Twitter, pound Wells Tech is the tag we search for. So I found an article that I shared via Twitter from Wired Magazine, and it's entitled, Should Students Use Wikipedia? And it's a great article that talks through the pluses and the minuses of, you know, where Wikipedia used to be and where it is now and how it's curated and maybe some things to think about if you're a teacher and you are one of those that says, you know, no way, no how on Wikipedia. There may be some reasons why you would want them to consider using Wikipedia articles and the like. So take a look at this article. I think it will kind of help you think through the decision process of, you know, is this something that is a valid resource in the educational setting or not.
And Wikipedia is not a new tool. It's very curated by this point in time. So I think there are a lot of valid articles out there, or at least as good as things that you might find in textbooks. Nothing is perfect, I'm guessing. So
Yep. And then through DIGO, I shared a couple other things that I want to bring up on the podcast. One of them is a cool a number of tools that teachers can use to make awesome infographics. I think everybody's familiar with what infographics are today. It's a visualization of information in a very interesting way. And I've played around with a few of these, and I think there is value in, let's say, a teacher using these to reinforce a concept or a topic in a visually interesting way. So this is an article from educatorstechnology.com, which is not a site I'd ever been to before, but stumbled across it and found this good article that talks about 8 different tools that you can use to easily and in a very drag-and-drop kind of way create infographics. Wordle happens to be in here, which we've talked about on the show before. You don't necessarily think of that as an infographic, but it definitely could be because it calculates the number of times a particular word is used in a paragraph or a composition of some sort and makes them bigger or smaller depending on that. So take a look at these suggestions, and I think you might have something here that will make a difference in your classroom. And then finally, I shared via Digo as well an article from that same resource, educatorstechnology.com, article entitled Everything Teachers Need to Know About Google Presentation. We talked a couple shows ago about dynamic presentations, and it's a class that I teach through MLC. But here is just a good jumping off point for all kinds of tutorials about how to do different things within Google Presentations. Most of these are Google resources, so they have a very complete and accurate listing of step-by-steps to accomplish specific tasks, and also some videos in some cases that walk people through how to change a theme or add a transition or animation or insert an image or insert a video, share your presentation, embed the presentation, those kinds of things. I know a lot of our schools are using Google Apps, so Google Presentation is probably a tool that you may need to be using or your students will be using, so good resources there.
Speaking of Digo, there were other links shared on Digo, and I just want to share. Last week we talked about Photoshop Elements 11.
I got my
copy from Sam's Club for $50, just like Tom Rose now shared with us. So I'm excited. I haven't installed it yet. That's my Thanksgiving project to get it installed and see how it's working.
Cool. Is there a physical DVD in there?
You know, I'd have to unbox it to tell you. I haven't broken the seal, but it sounds like it. It's rattling. What a concept, huh?
Something in your hands. That's pretty cool. You can actually wrap it and give it as a gift, too.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of Tom Rosenell, Tom is always willing to share with us via our Digo group. And this week he tagged an article called Tips for Keeping Your Gadgets Useful in a Storm. Kind of timely stuff with Hurricane Sandy. And, you know, you think about your gadgets and they're going to stay charged up for as long as you have electricity to charge them. My mom told me recently when a storm came through that she went to the drugstore and they still had electricity and they were willing to plug her phone in and charge it for her at the drugstore. So, you know, as long as you can keep it charged somehow with an electrical current, then you've got at least a little bit of a connection. And this article kind of goes through some tips and things for you to do if you are stuck in a storm with your electronic device. Maybe you want to, you know, be the journalist on the spot sharing photos of what's going on or whatever it is. Interesting read from Tom Rosenell.
Very nice.
Jason Schmidt shared a link on Digo as well to VoxoPop. And I laughed, Martin, when I brought this up, because when I brought it up a few minutes ago, the Zag website and Invisible Shield was actually a photo or a advertisement here on the site. So that's a side note. Anyway, VoxoPop allows you to do voice-based, basically forums. So you can have discussion forums, but with audio instead of all text.
Interesting.
And Jason picked this up in a class he's teaching for MLC. One of his students shared this and wanted to share it with us as well. Sounds like a interesting concept for classrooms to allow the students to speak. A lot of language learning perhaps would benefit from this kind of solution.
Oh, yeah, I can
solution.
See that. Awesome. Is it free? Mm-hmm.
I believe it is. Yep. I don't see anything about pricing anywhere. Didn't dig too deep, but I looked around a little and didn't see anything about pricing. So,
awesome. I'm going to try that.
One more that was shared by yours truly to wrap up our community feedback is a site called Pick Digest. I heard about this last week. And basically what it allows you to do is sign in with either or both your Instagram or Facebook accounts. And this is a way for you to share photos that you've shared on those sites with people that don't care to be on Instagram or Facebook. So for free, you can send an email digest of all the photos that you've posted recently. And so each day an email will go out with any new photos that you've updated on either of those sites. And you can also pay $2 a month and send to as many people as you want. So you get one email free And then $2 a month for as many as you want. I set it up to send the email to me, and I figured I could forward the email on mm-hmm. to my mom or my mother and father-in-law or whoever I want to share these pictures with that aren't part of Instagram or Facebook. So cool. I thought it was a cool concept and a way to engage those that don't participate in those social media sites.
I'm surprised you didn't save that for a future pick of the week.
I debated, but I thought speed test would be a better pick with today's discussion. So,
all right,
good. I'm excited about it, though.
Cool stuff. If you have things to say, wellstech.wells.net. Sally mentioned our voicemail number, wellstech@wells.net is email. We're on Pinterest, of course. We're on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So please give us your feedback. Next week, we are having another guest host, Gail Potratz, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, is going to join us. And we're going to talk about one-to-one iPads. And we have a great interview. A couple guys from Salem Lutheran School in Greenfield, Minnesota, because they've recently introduced iPads into their 7th and 8th grade classrooms. So looking forward to that. So please tune in after the Thanksgiving holiday, and we will do it all again with show 264. Speaking of doing it all again, Dan, we shouldn't probably wait another 263 episodes to have you on again. Really appreciated your contributions to the show this week, and blessings on your work in there in the Senate office. Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Sally Ann Martin, for having me on.
Okay. The Wells featured artist is in his service this week, and we will share with you their beautiful song, Praise God, From Whom All Blessings Flow. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a blessed Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.